den, vážení televizní diváci. V dnešním rozhovoru Britských listů máme mého dlouholetého bývalého spolupracovníka, profesora Andreje Rogačevského, který původně vyučoval rusistiku na Glasgow University a před několika lety odešel do Norska za polární kruh, kde je na univerzitě v městě Tromso. Andrej je rusista a naučil se také česky, ale v tomto rozhovoru budeme mluvit anglicky, protože Andrej vysvětluje.
Já byl žákem pana doktora Čulika a už bohužel dlouho jsem nemluvil česky, tak nejsem jistý, že bude to správné, tak především budeme používat angličtinu.
Dobře, budeme. Andrej, what is it like to teach Russian in the first place? Tromso is very near the Russian border, isn't it? And then, of course, there is the Poland night there for half of the year. So how long have you been there, actually, and what is it like?
I moved there in January 2014, mm-hmm. and that's in the middle of the Poland night, pretty much. But I found that I wasn't affected by Polar Night that much, that I was affected by Polar Day to a stronger degree. Mm-hmm. People tend to mention Polar Night first and foremost when they talk about those areas in the high north, but Polar Day is something that is equally dangerous to your health in a sense, because you cannot fall asleep. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I don't have to be there in the summer months, because mm-hmm. this is usually a break when university goes on a break. But otherwise, I'm used to it by now.
When does actually the polar day start in Tromso?
Roughly in May, June, July. It lasts from mid-May to maybe mid-July. When you have 24 hours of daylight, and the pole night starts in maybe November through February, something like that.
Okay, so you tend to escape to London during the summer?
It just happens so, because it's a teaching break. London is where my family lives. Otherwise, I suppose I would have gotten used to it even better.
Let's go a little bit into the polar night. So you say that you... It doesn't depress you that I mean, for months there is no daylight, basically.
Yeah, I discovered that I had an inner clock which helps me to wake up when I need to wake up and go to bed when I need to go to bed, and it wasn't a problem at all. But of course, I was very busy. I moved to a different university where I had to teach almost new courses from scratch, mm-hmm. and there were three maybe in the first semester, and then three more in the next semester. And I also had to learn Norwegian, because it was part of my contract. So I was extremely busy.
Okay.
It wasn't very important for me what time of the day it was.
So are you also teaching Norwegian?
No, I don't. I teach mostly in a combination of Russian and English, and Norwegian is what I use for administrative purposes and maybe for pastoral care.
Are your students primarily Norwegian, or are there also Russian students?
It's a mixture. Just like in Glasgow, we had a mixture of English, Scottish and European students. Some of them were Scandinavians, actually. In Tromsø, we have a mixture of Norwegian students who probably dominate numerically, but there are also Polish students who come on Erasmus exchange very often and stay with us sometimes up to a year. Some of them actually do a whole degree, or maybe a whole master's degree, not only a bachelor's degree. We also have students from other places in Scandinavia, from Sweden, usually from Swedish North, from Finland and so on. Germans come sometimes as well. So mm-hmm. it's a good mix. Although it's geographically remote, it's not really isolated. Tromsø used to have direct flights to London several times a week. Not anymore, but of course.
Not anymore because of COVID?
Or yeah, because of COVID, and I hope it'll be back at some point.
How is it with the student fees in Britain? That's outrageous. And what do students pay in Tromsø?
They pay a rather symbolic price administrative charge mm-hmm. Per semester, which is affordable, mm-hmm. Several hundred crowns. I was registered as a student myself to study Norwegian properly,
okay.
So that it goes in your curriculum, you sit exams and so on. You have to be registered as a student, mm-hmm. so I know how it is.
Is there any difference between undergraduate student fees and postgraduate student fees?
Yeah.
For instance, if a Czech student wanted to do a degree in Russian in Tromsø, it wouldn't be a huge financial burden?
Well, it depends. It's really expensive to live in Norway mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and in Scandinavia in general. So if you don't support yourself through work, even if you don't have to pay fees that much, the cost of living is prohibitively high. So some Russians, to continue answering your initial mm-hmm. questions, they do come. There are, however, requirements for most students to speak a Scandinavian language fluently to a degree that they can actually follow the lectures and sit mm-hmm. exams and so on and so forth. So there is a technical possibility for Russians from across the border to do that, because there are schools that teach in the advanced school years in Norwegian, a curriculum that allows you to actually come to Norway and study with Norwegian students proper. But the numbers are small, and as I say, the cost of living is mm-hmm. something.
The number of Russian students?
They do come. Mm-hmm. They speak very good Norwegian, usually better than mine. And they choose it consciously, because it is a bit of an investment. You really need to decide how you pay for your studies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And why do you think they come to Norway to study, these Russian students?
I never discussed that with any of them, actually, although I met quite a few in my classes. But I suspect this gives you an additional opportunity to do something with mm-hmm. yourself after you graduate. Mm-hmm. A degree from a Russian university, which could be a very good university, isn't necessarily automatically recognized in the West, whereas mm-hmm. a degree from a Norwegian university would be.
Which is the nearest Russian town? I mean, I'm putting you on the spot here.
Well, the nearest big Russian town is called Murmansk.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Where there was that nuclear base of submarine base.
I would say has been, but
has been.
I might be wrong.
All right, okay. You mean don't know? Yeah, okay, right. Okay.
I don't know for sure.
Okay, yes, of course. Who would? Anyway, but that was quite famous. But back to the courses.
You can sign up for the whole degree, but you can also sign up for separate courses. For some courses that we teach in Russian section, knowledge of Russian is not required.
Mm-hmm.
And we have more students there, obviously. So one thing is student program for those who study Russian studies. There is one program like that, and Russian language and literature and culture, which is another program. Mm-hmm.
So you it's more culturally based than social science based?
Social science comes in the Russian studies program when colleagues from history contribute and so on. But we also teach certain history courses, for example, old Russian history up until 1861
mm-hmm.
And Russia today. That's what we do as well. So it's a mixed bag which students can choose from pretty freely. The only thing is that if you don't have Russian from somewhere else, the language courses you need to follow through from basic to advanced.
When you talk about Russia today, a course about Russia today, can you summarize very quickly what, in the view of this course, Russia today is like?
Call it post-1991. So Russia today isn't 2021 necessarily. It's what happened mm-hmm. after the disappearance of the Soviet Union.
Uh-huh.
And we just use a particular textbook, the latest edition of which came out in 2014. Naturally, there have been many things that happened to Russia since the early 1990s. So we tried to talk about it in terms of who was in charge at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeltsin in the 90s, Putin 1 and Putin 2, the first two presidential periods, then Medvedev, and then Putin 3 plus. So that's how we organize it. And then whatever major happened, economic crises and various problems with the neighborhood and so on and so forth.
Uh-huh. Okay, so that's the politics, and otherwise it's language and culture. And who's your favorite author?
Russian author. I always struggle to answer a question like this because there are many authors that Russian culture has produced, and they're all wonderful in their own way. And I'm partial to Limonov out of...
Yes, I know, because you studied Limonov.
Yes, because I did my PhD on him. But
tell us about Limonov.
Limonov is known in the Czech Republic. Yes, agent provocateur. Is he known in the Czech Republic? I hope so, because he's been translated into Czech. He's a controversial politician. That's right. He was a controversial... controversial author, politician, public figure, who's not to everyone's liking. But I read his first novel, Это я, Эдичка, It's Me, Эдди, which was dedicated to his experience of emigrating into the United States in the mid-1970s from the Soviet Union, which is a fairly honest account of what emigres like him had to go through. And it, in many ways, revealed a similarity with my own experience when I moved to the UK in the early 1990s. So it just coincided with the time when I started my PhD program in at Glasgow University, actually.
So you got him as your alter ego.
I wouldn't put it like that. I keep a safe academic distance from Limonov, but in certain ways, at the time, it did pan out like something that I could relate to, and that's why I chose him for my PhD subject. And I've been following him ever since. I've done many other things since as well, but because he's a prolific living author until recently, it's just a must to keep sort of him in check and see what he's doing. And
why wouldn't some people like him? Why is he controversial?
Well, some people wouldn't like him because in his first novel he describes how he slept with black men in the back streets of New York. Others disliked him for being a wife beater, according to his later books, when he had problems with one of his wives in Paris. This book is called Taming the Tiger in Paris. Some other people would dislike him for his politics because he founded in the early 1990s the so-called National Bolshevik Party, which combines the extreme right with extreme left.
So that is interesting. How is that done? I suppose many people are doing that these days. Czech Social Democratic Party is doing it very successfully these days.
Well, you see, they probably need to read up on Limonov if they haven't done so yet. Mm-hmm. How is it done? Not particularly successfully. I think it's mostly a vehicle for self-promotion in his particular case. It's a serious party which is full of interesting, bright people, but it's numerically very small, and it's better perhaps at actions that propel it onto the first pages of mass media than on changing something in Russia radically the way they would like to. Mm-hmm. They combine protectionism, economic protectionism, and anti-Western stance with nationalism, which is not a narrow concept of nationalism. Jews and gypsies and so on are sort of welcome in that party, as far as I can understand, because they need bodies in. Many of them get arrested in their public actions of protest, and you need to have a fresh supply of members. But essentially, many people who were at some stage or still are members of that party, they are talented musicians, artists, authors, and so on. So it has been a significant cultural phenomenon in Russia, and I'm still working on my book about the National Bolshevik Party, which has been in the books for a long time now. It's plenty of material there. That's beyond Limonov. Limonov, that's the PhD, and his art is close to his politics, but sort of separate at the same time as well. So I was more interested in how the party members do their own art. So that's the long and the short of it. But I'm not saying that one of my favorite author of all times is just somebody who's been fun to study without much admiration.
Thank you very much, vážení televizní diváci. Andrej Rogačevský, odborník na Rusko, kulturu, politiku na Norské univerzitě v Tromso, daleko za polárním kruhem.
Děkuji za pozornost.
Taky, teď co jsem chtěl říct. Naschledanou.